Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a bit of context to this story. This is an experience that I think I've shared with you before, that I wrote this talk around. But the context was last weekend I went to Zen Mountain Monastery for 3 days for a conference for the White Plum Asanga. That's the lineage from Maizumi Roshi and all the Zen teachers connected with it. So there are about 35 or 40 teachers out of about 70 total. Two or three from Europe and the rest from, I think there's one from Mexico and the rest from the U.S. And as it worked out, Bob Roshi Kennedy, my teacher, asked if I would drive him up there, if he could come up with me. And it was originally, he wanted as many of his successors to go to this meeting and to meet everybody, because a lot of us haven't. And so I went up, I drove he and Michael Halloran, who is a college professor and also a Dharma successor of Roshi, and also a priest. So you have Bob Kennedy, who's a Roman Catholic priest and also a Zen teacher, and Michael Halloran, who's a Roman Catholic priest and also a Zen teacher, Ray Cicchetti, myself, and then a couple of others of his successors from different parts of the country who were there as well. And there's also, so let me see if I can get the lineage correct. Bob Kennedy and Bernie Glassman. Bernie Glassman made Bob Kennedy a teacher. And Bernie Glassman also made Don Singer, a rabbi, a teacher. And if you know anything about Bernie Glassman, he has a very ecumenical approach, a very unusual approach also to Zen. But in the beginning years, he was really an advocate of interfaith practice and installed a number of teachers that were not Buddhist and were not priests. So this is the backdrop. This I could go on for hours talking about this weekend, which was really quite fabulous in many ways. Fast forward now to today and today's talk. About, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, I attended a retreat at Innisfada, which is a Catholic retreat house in Manhasset, New York. And during one of the, and I think this is the part that I've talked to you about before, during one of the rest breaks, I went for a walk to explore the grounds. And during the walk, a steady rain began to fall. And walking down this secluded path, I encountered a sculpture of Christ's faith at the time of his crucifixion. Now, I am, just to be clear, a lapsed Lutheran. I've left Lutheranity, whatever you call it, Lutheranism, and never looked back. So I don't, you know, I don't read the Bible in any particular regularly. You know, if I come across something that's meaningful, well, that was another, just another aside. Bob Kennedy and Don Singer. Don Singer is a wonderful guy. He is like a classic rabbi. He's wide open-hearted, happy guy. And Roshi is pretty similar. They were constantly, that's where you want to shoot yourself after a while, exchanging biblical pastures and literary references and stuff. So anyway, so back to this walk that I took. And So I encounter, because this is a Catholic retreat place, this sculpture of Christ's face at the time of the crucifixion. And as I approach the image, you know, just to take a closer look, a raindrop fell just below Christ's left eye and ran down his cheek, leaving a trail. And it looked like, to me, a tear. And as I stood there, the image seemed to come to life. And at first, I imagined that the tear was an expression of the physical pain that Christ would be in, or perhaps the betrayal that he was suffering. But then I thought, no, that the tear was more likely an expression of his compassion for the suffering of his tormentors. And the words, the classic words, "Father, forgive them, they know not what they do," came to mind. And there's also Mother Teresa said, "If we really want love, we must learn how to forgive. So I saw this experience as a metaphor for the unconditional love that arises when our attachment to self dissolves and we realize the divine. And this divinity is not the property of any particular religion. It's universal. And it's expressed in all of the mystical traditions of the world's religions. And by mystical tradition, I mean the branch of each religion that emphasizes direct experience as opposed to dogma. Rumi wrote, "What is done, O Muslims? For I do not recognize myself. I am neither Christian, nor Jew, nor Muslim. I am not of the East, nor the West, for I belong to the soul of the Beloved." Hui Neng said, "Take the mask off. What do you see now?" So what is the mask to which he is referring? Well, it's the self, the amalgam of our thoughts, ideas, and experiences. And taking the mask off is the experience of no self. Who we are exists in our minds. And when the mind becomes still in meditation, self drops away. When self drops away, there is no longer a self and an other. There is no longer a sense of separation. There is just oneness. We become intimate with the entire universe. In fact, even concepts such as we and universe drop away. And as I said so many times before, when this experience occurs, conventional knowing stops. And when knowing stops, there are no boundaries. We fall in love with everything. We have an intimate relationship with everything. In Dewdrops on a Lotus Leaf, Ryokan writes, "The flower invites the butterfly with no self. The butterfly visits the flower with no self. The flower opens. The butterfly comes. The butterfly comes. The flower opens. I don't know others. Others don't know me." So by not knowing, nature follows its own course. This intimacy, this deep appreciation for the interconnectedness of all things, is, as I've mentioned before, what we call wisdom in Zen. But in our tradition, we don't stop there. Like Christ, we must express this wisdom in the everyday world. It's not enough to sit on a mountaintop, in a cave, or in a monastery exuding unconditional love. That's incomplete. Wisdom must be put into action. And in fact, there is an existential saying which is, "The only truth is in action." Dogen wrote, "Those who see worldly life as an obstacle to the way don't see the way in everyday actions. They have not yet discovered that there are no everyday actions outside of the way." The activity of wisdom in everyday life is called compassion, because we are deeply connected to everyone and everything. We really have no choice but to act. As Bernie Glassman often says, and I've used this example as well before, when you burn your left hand on the hot stove, the other hand doesn't think about whether it should respond or not. It doesn't castigate the other hand for getting burned. It simply acts. There's no separation. It's just the functioning of one body. There is just an immediate expression of unconditional love and attention. When Christ was being crucified, he was not perceiving the crucifiers as other. When he said, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do," he was speaking from the perspective of one body, responding to them with compassion and forgiveness, with unconditional love. This was wisdom being lived out in the world. No dogma can teach this. It must arrive from direct experience. And this experience is not just the province of Zen. It can be found in the mystical traditions of all the world's religions. So concludes my sermon for today.